What about those who do the jobs that we cannot or do not want to do? What about those whose hard work makes our work and our lives possible and comfortable? On our Justice Center, the words of Martin Luther King Jr. inscribed, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." So, members of the City Council, please show fairness, compassion, vision, and love. In addition to approving the increased TIF set aside, continue to work for housing for everyone. Higher-end housing may support our tax base and our attractive public image, but housing for everyone supports our humanity. We need more than Band-Aids. We need substantive and continuing action, and we need it now. Take up that challenge that was alluded to before, the opportunity that the current housing crisis offers. Just do it and walk the talk.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm David King. I'm from Luther Memorial Church, and I work with like a PAM church unit, and also I work with giving children food and stuff every week, every Tuesday. So about 50 people. So it's just something that I'm trying to, you know, work with on that. And also thank you for the council for working with homeless people also. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. We have a few more signed up.
The last two I have are Peggy on Southeast Madison and Diane Lynn.
Peggy, you're still here? Okay. Diane, you may get the last word, and not for the last time.
Good afternoon, members of City Council. Diane Lynn, Executive Director of Progground, and I was just going to make the joke. It's not often that I get the last word in a situation
Sorry,
like this.
Sorry, I stole your line.
But that's fine. I will make it brief, mercifully, for all of you and for all of us, but I do want to thank you for the great progress we've made today. In this last window of time, we've just really had a momentum going, a focus on this incredibly important issue. I just, again, want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for taking the lead on the Nexus study. That's obviously a very important kind of calibration of exactly how much we really can generate out of the development of commercial that is going to require, hopefully, that workforce and housing balance that we all believe so much is important. And at the same time, I think we do need to keep a full court press on the legislature to quit creating, to remove those barriers. I've mentioned it before. We've got a lot more work to do. We may have an opportunity to close the door on it, remove that barrier in the 2016 session. We'll be in touch with you about our approach to work on that together. Almost an insult that the legislature would stand in the way of an august body like yours to at least be able to apply these tools. I just came back from a national conference with colleagues across the country, and I'm telling you, there are jurisdictions that are creating hundreds of units of housing using the inclusionary zoning and linkage fee tools. So I think we're going to need, again, everything we can get. I'm also here to reinforce the message you heard from Steve Messinetti at Habitat for Humanity about the home ownership component of the housing continuum. Absolutely focus most attention on the most needy. I did that when I was in public office. I honor all of you for doing that too. And at the same time, we've got to look at the holistic, kind of comprehensive need to help people move out of subsidized rental, which can be very expensive, when they're ready, when they're stable, into homeownership opportunities, instead of having them compete in a rental market that's almost impossible for a lot of families. As Steve said, we are creating opportunities that will stabilize families once and for all, anchor them in communities, and allow those children to go to those public schools and stay put for the duration. It's a life cycle result kind of solution, as opposed to these continual efforts to just hope that transition is going to work for families. There was a lost in translation problem, I think, with the homeownership program between PDC and the Housing Bureau. No one's fault specifically. It's just, I think it is something we would really love to talk to you about, because we, I think, could do a better job of being creative at leveraging all those resources. I spent much of my career, as you know, in the homelessness arena and have a deep commitment to that. It's not to take a cent away from that effort. It's to be creative with leveraging what we can bring to the table at Proud Ground and create permanent homeownership and market protect those units citywide so we can reduce displacement going forward into the future. Again, if we'd been able to plant those seeds years ago, if we can't do it then, today's as good a day as any to do it going forward. So, of course, the set-aside now increased in the different urban renewal districts is what many of us came to talk to you about, and in representing those that wonderful coalition of activists, we thank you so much for being so responsive so quickly. Sometimes these things take longer, and you're obviously responding to the crisis that the community is really feeling. And finally, I would just say it is going to take creativity. It's going to take partnerships. It's going to take leveraging. And we should continue our work to do it using the information we've got going forward. And in order to save those very expensive units of housing for people that need them most, we've got to look up the continuum and help families move into the most appropriate housing for them citywide at all levels of the median incomes up to 100% ideally. So we look forward to that continued partnership and I wish you all a great afternoon.
Diane, since you had the last word, can I just offer two observations? The first is that I don't think that the affordable home ownership agenda got lost in the handoff. I think we hit the worst recession in years in my lifetime and the housing market collapsed. So I think the opportunity to implement some of those goals became compromised at a time when people couldn't get financing, and people were hammered during the recession. I have one regret, however, and that is that we didn't take a page out of the Habitat book and do massive land banking during the recession. Habitat had John Gray's money, and John Gray's money allowed them to buy tracts of foreclosed properties and areas of the city where developers gave up on developing. They came in and bought it at a discount. I wish we had done a lot of land banking because there wasn't the same opportunity to get people into homes, but we could have, I think, acquired dirt at a discount. So I regret that. But the other thing is about inclusionary zoning. There are four Democrats in the Senate who keep us from getting the preemption lifted. My own personal view is last time we complicated this exercise by crafting a legislation and putting sideboards rather than just lifting the preemption. And I'm going to be arguing forcefully that our strategy this time is lifting the preemption. But three of those Democrats in the Senate don't live in the Portland metropolitan area. So it really, on some level, doesn't matter what you and I think. If we don't mobilize the people in their districts and across the state to say this is a statewide problem, we're not going to win the fight in the Senate. We've got Tina Kotek in the House. We're not going to win this fight in the Senate. And three of the four Democrats that blocked us last time don't live in the Portland metropolitan area. So I hope, as we look at either the short session opportunities or the next biennium, that we focus on a clean lifting of the preemption, keep it simple. And I hope we develop a strategy to appeal, to make the case to a number of our friends in the Senate that maybe still have concerns about what this means, but that will not be Portland's voices that carry that day. There will be mostly voices in places like Eugene and on the coast, and I think that's where we should be focusing, mobilizing support.
We have a contract Proud Ground does with Lincoln County, working statewide. The wonderful mayor of Eugene, Bend. Places like Hood River that have absolutely no housing inventory are really attuned to this. The coalition was pretty statewide. You're absolutely right. We can discuss the political nuances of sausage making in Salem as it goes sometimes and figure out the best path to win the day to allow us enough latitude to get to use this tool in Portland and statewide.
I just point out that last time the legislation that was debated didn't have anything to do with rental housing, which made it fundamentally flawed. And we didn't get past the Senate, where we have a majority. So there's two pieces I think we should revisit if we're going to try to get this over the goalpost, either in the short session or next time.
Completely understand, want the same thing you do. There were reasons for that, and we can best discuss that offline. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Diane.
You bet.
Mayor, I just wanted, before we move to voting, just to clarify for everybody in the audience exactly what we're voting on today. So we are voting today on the resolution to go ahead with the Nexus study, the linkage fee study, that will look at the development's impacts on affordable housing. And then next week, as per our council procedures, we will vote on whether to increase the tax increment set aside from present 30% to 45%. So just for clarification. And I just also wanted to just take this opportunity to thank a lot of people that worked very hard on the tax increment set-aside, since many of them probably won't be in the audience next week when we actually vote. I want to start out with, first of all, thanking the Portland Housing Advisory Committee. Commission, I'll get that right one of these days. The Portland Development Commissioners. Patrick Quinton, the Executive Director of PDC, and Kurt Krieger, the Director of the Housing Bureau, for their collegial work on these issues. It was not easy, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, to get to where we got to with 45%, and that does bring me to thanking once again Mayor Hales, but also the people who work behind the scenes to really make us look good, and that's people like Kimberly Branham, the Deputy Director of PDC, I hope I got your title right, Jillian Detweiler of the mayor's office. Sonia, what's Sonia's last name?
Shemansky.
Sonia Shemansky in Commissioner Fitch's office. And then most, and certainly last but not least, but Shannon Callahan in my office and Brendan Finn. Couldn't have got there without the work, dedicated work of all the staff who helped push us, the electeds or the appointeds, across the finish line in this great compromise. So thank you very much.
Commissioner, is there a reason that we can't add an emergency clause to the second ordinance?
As long as the council would like to do that. So
yeah, if we're unanimous, I guess that's...
All right, let's take action first on the resolution, because that doesn't require any amendment to do that, and then we'll see if we have a motion to add the emergency clause. Okay?
Novick?
I just want to add to Commissioner Fish's frustration about the tools that we don't have. We don't have inclusionary zoning until we get some of those four Democrats to switch, or if they're replaced, or get some Republicans. I look at the housing market, and it seems to me we've got all these rich people moving to Portland and buying houses at really expensive prices. And I think, wouldn't it be nice if we had a luxury tax on houses that are above, say, $500,000? But we can't do such a luxury tax because the voters of the state a couple of years ago passed a ban on real estate transfer taxes. I've talked to some legislators about asking voters, would they consider allowing real estate transfer taxes only on houses above $500,000 or, say, $1 million? And so it'll be interesting to see if they act on that. It's also frustrating that the operations of Measure 50, the arcane property tax limitation that was passed in 1996, prevent us from getting the full value of the housing appreciation we've already seen just in regular property taxes in recently gentrified areas. We have this ridiculous situation where taxes are relatively much higher in East Portland than they are in expensive recently gentrified areas of Inner East. If we had the full tax benefit of that gentrification, we could devote more resources to affordable housing. So absent those tools, we have to look for other tools. And I was very excited when I heard about this idea of a linkage fee. I think I first recognized this as an option when Joe Zender told me about it. We were both on a trip to Toronto a few weeks ago. So I applaud the commissioner in charge and staff for their creativity and really hope that this will prove to be a valuable tool. Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner Salzman, I especially appreciate that this study is being done within existing resources, that clearly it is a priority to get the data which would support any increase fees on this linkage plan. So I very much support this. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you, Dan, for bringing this forward. This is one of a number of innovative ideas that you've spearheaded as the Housing Commissioner, and I am frankly proud of the work that you've done, particularly in the last 2 months, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Thank you very much. It's courageous and creative, and it will make a difference. Aye. And now, is there a motion to add the emergency clause?
I move to add an emergency clause.
Second.
We need some language for that.
We're just adding the emergency clause.
But we need a reason.
Because it's in the public.
Because there's a declaration of a housing emergency, we add the emergency clause to this ordinance.
Carla, thank you for keeping us on the straight and narrow. We are very lucky to have Carla.
It doesn't look like it passes the straight face test with her.
She does a superb job in her capacity. Thank you, Carla.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now we can take a vote.
Roll on the motion. Novick?
This is just to add the clause.
Carla, just to reassure you, we won't start declaring an emergency on every topic that we want to add an emergency clause to. This is, I think, a unique case.
It's just
something
adding the clause.
Oh, sorry, right. Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and now on the ordinance as amended.
Novick.
I am incredibly impressed by all the work people have done in the past few weeks. I really appreciate the fact that staff and fellow commissioners did a great amount of outreach. I know that there's people in the Lentz area and Gateway areas that are still worried, but I think that some of them have been reassured. I'm concerned by the case that the Frieda Christopher from David Douglas made. So we are not making everybody happy, and this is not a perfect process, but it's also not a perfect situation. I also know that people thought it would be nifty to get to 50, but 45 is obviously significant progress. So I wish we were not facing this housing emergency at all. I wish there were easier ways to deal with the problem. I recognize people have legitimate concerns, but this is an important step. It will create housing units. I very much appreciate the work of the bureaus and the advisory committees and all of the advocates and Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fish and the mayor and Commissioner Fritz for working on this. Aye.
Fritz.
I appreciate all the work of the staff in Portland Development Commission as well as in the Portland Housing Bureau, but particularly all of the input we've received from the community and from each community that's affected by this. And I appreciate that the resolution, the ordinance is now more nuanced and looks at specific urban renewal districts. Thanks, as always, to the League of Women Voters for weighing in with their advice. I hope we've heard a lot of concern about the advisory committee being now a citywide advisory committee, and it seems to me that reconstituting the Gateway, Lentz, and Interstate Urban Renewal Committees in a different format, perhaps, and perhaps through the Portland Housing Bureau specifically to guide these changes forward would be, yes, more work in the near term, but in the long run would help make sure that communities have their voice and that they know what's happening and that they know which order it's happening in. So I urge you to consider that as a process to move forward. And I dedicate my vote to Gretchen Gafori. Aye.
Fish.
I began today thanking and acknowledging all the people that brought us this day. And I, again, want to thank the mayor and the housing commissioner, my colleagues, Mac G, the PHAC, all of the advocates who have been pushing hard for us to step up and address this challenge, each of you who have taken time from your day, the Welcome Home Coalition, all the heroes in the field doing the hard work that have caused us to take this action. This is not new money per se. This is reprioritizing existing money. And so when we hear the voices of people saying we need new money, let's remember that we are reprioritizing existing funds to meet a crisis, but we're not yet at the point where we have robust new money. And we desperately need new money. And I'll close with a story. Early this morning, I start every day at Pete's on Broadway, and early this morning I was with some friends having a cup of coffee, and a middle-aged woman walked in, and she was drenched because she had been outside. And she was homeless, and she had a bruise on her face. And when she came up to me, she had alcohol on her breath. And she asked me for a dollar. And I hesitated for a second because I instinctively want to help everyone that needs help, but I also want to make sure the money goes to the right cause. And that's why I generally give through trusted nonprofits who then provide the service so that I know that the dollar is being well spent. But she was standing there wet and cold and homeless and alcohol in her breath, and she asked for a dollar, so I, of course, gave her a dollar. And when she left, one of my friends in the table said, you know, shame on the city for not providing a shelter or a home for her. And instead, spending money on, and he rattled off a number of things, as people often do, that they're sort of acting in denial about the fact we don't have enough resources. As if we didn't spend money on curb cuts, and if we didn't spend money on transportation alternatives, we'd have this huge pot of money to take care of everyone in need. Well, that's a fiction. And I wasn't really getting through to my friend until I changed the frame of the comments, and I said, let me put it slightly differently. The federal government is subsidizing your home and your second home. And it's a lavish subsidy because we allow you to deduct your mortgage and your property taxes. And you're getting one of the greatest gifts that you can get in our country because you don't need it. But we are subsidizing your home and your second home. And we are not providing the money for this woman. What's wrong with that? And I have to say, it caused us to change the frame of that conversation, and it changed the outcome of that conversation. We are a very generous nation in subsidizing the housing of people who don't need it. And we are awfully parsimonious when it comes to providing homes to people who desperately need them. And we are going to take some more urban renewal money today, and we're going to allocate it to housing, and I applaud Dan for brokering this deal. And we're going to take some general fund money through the fall bump in the regular budget, and we're going to put it in housing, and it's going to come at the expense of other programs. But we will not fundamentally change this debate until the federal government asserts its obligation to provide federal support for housing and until we have a new revenue source. And I will remind everyone here that there is only one issue that we have not heard in any of the debates at the federal level to date. Only one issue that I can remember on either side, and that is the role of housing in America. So I applaud the action today. And with the tools that we have, I think we're acting responsibly. But let's not forget that in America, the biggest housing subsidy goes to the people who need it the least, and the greatest need goes unfunded. And until we change that dynamic, we are going to be moving the deck chairs on the Titanic to address this crisis, and we will not be able to make the kind of serious social change that I think we all support. And today I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I very much appreciate the council's support for increasing the tax increment set aside from 30% to 45% and generating some $64 million of additional investment in affordable housing. And I do pledge to the Lentz and to the Gateway neighbors that much like as Bishop Stephen Holt suggested that perhaps we take the North Northeast Oversight Committee, expand its membership and use it to provide us good input on how we spend those additional housing dollars in a way that's conducive with the hopes and aspirations of those geographic areas, which includes not only things like home ownership, but also issues around acquisition and rehabilitation versus new construction, and to have all those things factored in before we make the final budget allocations under this new amount of money that's being dedicated by the City Council today. So we will have that process, and we'll figure out. We don't have a North Northeast Oversight Committee in Lentz or in Gateway, but I think we probably have, I know we know the people there to contact to get the feedback that we need as we craft these plans, and we will do that starting tomorrow. So I appreciate, again, everybody's support, and this is a significant increase in the amount of money dedicated to affordable housing. And I pledge on behalf of myself and the Housing Bureau that we will spend it wisely and effectively. Thank you. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I'm very proud of this city and this city council. It was exactly 3 weeks ago that we declared a state of housing emergency. Government doesn't often do this much in a lot longer than 3 weeks. And there's more that we will do together because there's more to do. There are people outside who need to be in shelter. There are people who are losing their apartment because of a renovation or a sale or a rent increase or a 30-day eviction that soon will not be a 30-day eviction, also thanks to this council in that same three-week period. So I'm proud of the fact that we have focused on this emergency together and together with a lot of people in the community. I want to thank all of you who are advocates for this. And I want to second some of the comments that my colleagues have made, starting with taking off Commissioner Fish on one of your points, and that is it's important to remember that the federal government, you know, when I first arrived at this dais, most of what we were spending on housing was community development block grant money coming from the federal government, where that no longer amounts to much. And the city wasn't dedicating property tax dollars to affordable housing like we are. And it's important to remember that's what we're talking about here. These are property tax dollars. We call them TIF, but that's property tax dollars that are simply channeled through a different ditch to a different bucket, but they're the same property tax dollars. And they would be going to police, fire, parks, libraries, mental health, and schools if they weren't going down this channel. But I'm really proud of the fact that we have both reduced the size of that flow, because last year this council adopted a proposal that I brought forward to go from 11 urban renewal districts to 9 and put $800 million back on the tax rolls. That was a good move, and it was a right focusing of PDC on things that really matter. And this is another one, but we're focusing the resources we have on things that really matter. There have been a number of numbers thrown around the room today. It's important to remember that with this addition, we will now be at $270 million of that particular bucket of property tax dollars that we call tax income advancing going into housing. That's an impressive accomplishment, and we should be proud of that. And we're going to, as Commissioner Fish said, we're going to find more dollars in our general fund and anywhere else we can, including a tax on demolitions that will be coming back to this council in a few weeks, to pay for home ownership opportunities and other housing needs. And in effect, this council is taking the cash drawer that we have and shaking it upside down and finding almost every dollar that we could possibly find for housing. But we have to find additional dollars in addition to this, and maybe even from a source other than property taxes for a change. So that's why these discussions about what the legislature should set us free to do and what we might do under the Nexus study that we've approved here this afternoon might lead to, because there's not much else in that drawer after this good work. And I'm proud of the good work, but I think we all know it's not enough, but it's a lot. And I'm proud of this. I think it's going to make a difference for a lot of people. I think all of us have, in recent months and weeks, just met individual neighbors of ours who are victimized by this huge economic change and who are being left behind and who are scared and, in some cases, who are homeless or facing homelessness. So this is real and it's personal for those folks, and I hope that it's personal for all of us. It is for the five of us, I think, as you can tell. And I'm really proud of that. Thank you all. Aye. And we're adjourned.
Thank you.